Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein. This week we will be doing a continuation of our show on Open Orthodoxy. We will have Rabbi Yisachar Katz, who's the head of department of the Halacha and Gemara at Yeshiva Chovevei Torah. I'm pronouncing it that way because I saw I got a few phone calls that I was criticized by them for pronouncing it incorrectly. We will also have David Rosenthal, who's a Talmud of Rabbi Feldman. He wrote a book, or a sefer, called Open Orthodoxy, Is It Really Orthodox? He will have a commentary on what Rabbi Katz said. We will also have Rabbi Shmuley Yankelowitz, who's one of their most famous graduates of Yeshiva Chovevei Torah. We got a lot of reaction to the last show. Many people criticized me, both for having it on, additionally for not being critical enough, being too permissive. So I said originally I will let everybody judge for themselves. Before we start, okay, you can listen to us on Matzah Shabbos from 11 to 12 midnight on WMCA 570 AM or WMCA.com or on the Nachum Segal Network, and Monday morning at 11 a.m. at NachumSegal.com. You can find all our shows at HeadlinesBook.com under the audio or podcast section or on iTunes. And you can always call on our hotline, 732-806-8700, to listen or to make a comment. You can email any questions or comments to info@HeadlinesBook.com. Before we start, I would like to just say a small thought. You know, we just finished the 3 weeks, Tisha B'Av, and Moshe said, and we said Eicha. And Chazal say three times we had Eicha, three said Eicha, Moshe, Yeshaya, and Yirmiyah. Moshe said, Eicha esa levadi terchachem, how can I carry such a difficult people all alone on my back? Yeshaya said, Eicha, Yirmiyah said, Eicha yashva badad, and ultimately we had Eicha nasa lezayna kiryatamana. So there seems to be some connection between the three. And I heard a vart from a very chashuv rav here in Muncie. He said, Moshe said, Eicha esa levadi. How can I carry all this responsibility all by myself? Nobody's willing to pitch in. And when nobody else feels the achrayus except for one or two people, ultimately you end up with Eicha nasa lezayna and Eicha yashva badad. If we don't pitch in, if all of us don't feel that each one of us is a yachid and has an achrayus, we can't rely. This is not Christianity where we have the infallibility of a pope. Every one of Klal Yisrael is kol adam nivra yachidi. Every one of us is an individual. Each one of us has to accept responsibility. The Gemara says, why was Yehuda Zeicha Lamalchus? Because he said, Ki avdecha oriv eshanar. He pitched in. He accepted responsibility. And you know, the Mishnah of it says, Eze derech ra. What's a bad way to lead your life? Loiva ve'enei mishalim. To borrow and not to pay. I mean, of all the Taryag mitzvahs, that's the only one they could find. It's even not one of the Taryag mitzvahs. Even the whole Prius Bochayv mitzvah, Gemara says in Hakaisiv, but it's not one of the Tariq mitzvahs. Chaim Shmulevitz says, if you don't have responsibility, it's before Tariq mitzvahs. It's derech eretz kadmah l'Torah. He says, you're not even an Adam. If you, loiva ve'enei mishalim is not an Adam. He doesn't accept responsibility. You know, I have a friend. I shouldn't say a friend. I'm honored to call him a friend. His name is George Rohr. And he's one of the biggest Bali tzedakah in the world. And he founds yeshivas in all remote parts of the world. And I say, what's the number one thing you look for? He says, somebody who has empathy and a sense of achrayus. I said, give me an example. He said, okay. He said, I sent a fellow to Kazakhstan to start a yeshiva there. He said, and I got a call from the community, and it really made me rest. He says, because I'm looking for somebody, will they go to such a remote place and really get the job done at such mesiris nefesh? He says, the president of the community called me up and he said, they were stunned. He said, the couple, young couple in their 20s, were there for 2 weeks and they went out and they bought two places in the local Beis HaChaim. the Beis Elohim, they bought two plots in the cemetery. Like Ruth said to Nami, and Nami says, thanks her for a great kindness. What he says, Asher telchi elech, v'sham ekaver, I will be buried there too. That's how great my sense of Achrayus is. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, how did Echa start? You know when Echa starts? With apathy. The opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is disinterest, lack of a willingness to give a hand, help out. Every one of us, if we love, we can't be apathetic. We have to be Makabel Achrayus. That is one of the great lessons of Tisha B'Av. We have on the phone with us from Yerushalayim, Rabbi Yisoscha Katz, who is the head of both Gemara and Halacha in Yeshivas Chai Vevei Torah. Welcome, Rabbi Katz.
Thank you.
So, Rabbi Katz, as I'm sure you're aware, Yeshivas Chai Vevei Torah has made quite a lot of waves in the world. And people are, you know, Yiddishkeit, Judaism, is always concerned with a new movement. We were concerned, you know, I guess it goes back to Shapsi Tzvi, and we've always been concerned about, quote-unquote, the new. And Yeshivas Chai Vevei Torah has come in as a new movement, etc. And there's a concern, are the halachic and hashkafic paradigms of Yeshivas Chai Vevei Torah, are they in line with what is accepted with historic orthodoxy? So could you give us a little bit of your understanding of it?
Yeah, sure. I'll be very happy to do that, David. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. So I think that in a nutshell, if I wanted to describe the ethos of Chai Vevei Torah, Rabbi Avi Weiss, the founder of the yeshiva, said it very well. Basically, what Rabbi Avi Weiss said is that if you look at the statistics, 10% of Jews are Orthodox, the other 90% of Jews are not. And that's tragic, because if you are an Orthodox Jew and you believe that there's something incredibly beautiful and incredibly exciting about Orthodoxy, the fact that it appeals to only 10% of the Jewish community is, I would say, borders on the tragic, and is very sad and painful. And in a nutshell, the goal of Yeshivat Chai Vevei Torah is to really figure out a way to bring the beauty of Orthodoxy to the 90% of Jews who don't think that Orthodoxy has anything whatsoever to say to them. That's an incredibly exciting task, and at the same time, also an incredibly challenging task. It means that you have to figure out how to kind of present what is so beautiful and so amazing to you to an audience who comes, I would perhaps say, at best, is apathetic to what it is that we have to offer, and at worst, vehemently opposed. And that is a very difficult task. It's a very hard task, a very challenging task, because what it means then is that you have to try to figure out how to do what it takes in order to make this, make Orthodoxy that you find so appealing, equally appealing to people who don't. And you want to do it in a way that is creative, but also authentic. And that is a very thin and very dangerous line, frankly. So if you're asking me, are we walking on a very thin line? Yes. Have we succeeded in still holding on to that line? In my opinion, absolutely. I know others disagree. But definitely, as far as I'm concerned, we have done a great job in trying to really walk that tightrope balance between making Yiddishkeit and observing Yiddishkeit appealing to people for whom it doesn't appeal to, but at the same time stay within the boundaries of what Halacha and Orthodoxy prescribes.
So then would it be fair to say that your message is really not then for the mainstream, but it's really more for those who are either the 90% or those among the 10% who are struggling?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I actually can illustrate it to you with a story that happened with me. I suspect that before you interview you interviewed me, you kind of looked up my background. So I'm assuming you know that I grew up in Satmar. So I very vividly remember when I was learning in Fatma Yeshiva, I was about 14 or 15 years old. And, you know, in Fatma, it's very easy to be countercultural because Fatma has a very narrowly proscribed curriculum, what you could learn, what you can't learn, you know, even in Hasidus. Some of your listeners might be surprised that even in Sifrei Hasidus, there was a very limited, palette of what we can learn and what we can read. So, you know, I had my rebellious moments, and one of my rebellious phases was that I decided to read Rav Tzadik HaKohen from Lublin, his Sefer Pritzadik, because, you know, people would talk about, oh, Rav Tzadik is amazing, Rav Tzadik is wonderful. And then I started reading him, and I went to my Rebbe and I said, you know, Rebbe, I'm not feeling it. I'm not seeing what's really such a big deal, why people are so excited. And my Rebbe had a one-liner which stayed with me forever. And my Rebbe said, you know, Yisrofkar, Rav Tzadik talks a lot about tikkun. He first has to experience the kilkul in order to appreciate the beauty of his creative tikkun, which I thought was a very beautiful line describing Rav Tzadik. I think that would be the line I would use to describe what we're doing. If you're a good, nice, Orthodox Yeshiva Bachar in El Yisrael, you should absolutely not touch anything that has to do with Chovei Torah. Because you're in a happy place religiously, you're a happy place with Yiddishkeit, you're fine, you shouldn't be reading anything having to do with it, you know? And I frankly think that these essays and books that are published that really, so to speak, show to the Haredi world what we're doing is so damaging to the Haredi world, especially for people who, they're fine. They're not struggling with questions in the Muna. They're not struggling with questions of values. If you've experienced the kilkul, then we are very excited in holding hands and joining with you on this journey of trying to figure out how could we make it possible for you to still be committed to Torah, to Yiddishkeit, to Avodas Hashem, to Yiras Shamayim, and so on and so forth. So, yeah. If you haven't experienced the kilkul, do not touch anything having to do with Chovei Torah.
Rabbi Yisachar, let me just tell you a few quotes that really get people very nervous. And maybe you could. Here's a quote from Rabbi Farber that got people so upset. Here's one. Avram and Sarah are folkloristic characters. Factually speaking, they're not my ancestors or anyone else's. He's basically saying the Avis are folklore and they never existed.
And I'm saying to you that he's an epicurus.
Wow, that's powerful. So I
now
have
here's where I would sort of continue the conversation. The question then becomes, what does one do with someone who espouses epicurus in the 21st century? Right? And that's when the issue gets complicated. Do we apply the Chazon Ish Antinik Shnishba today? Do we not apply that? Do we have to be sensitive to the fact that he represents a significant segment within the community that struggles with biblical criticism? That's where things get complicated, and when people misconstrue what our attitude is in the abstract, that this is a kfira, this is a apikorsis, you have to believe that the Torah is real and true, with what do we do once we've accepted that someone espouses a radical view?
But here's my question to you. I would like to compound that, okay?
Sure.
I don't know what the answer to that, because that's a very complex question, but let me make it even more complex. When somebody is like on the board of a yeshiva and he's in some way a representative of a yeshiva, like he's the editor of the journal, and he espouses that, it blackens the eye of the yeshiva. And, you know, he becomes, in effect, seen as a representative, as a mouthpiece. Isn't it damaging for the institution to have somebody like that, who's an editor of the journal, espousing things and not coming out and saying what you know?
Right. So,
I mean, are you doing yourself justice?
Yeah, no, so first of all, he's not the editor of, whom are you talking about? You're talking
Rabbi
about,
Zev Farber is the editor of the journal, The Keren. That's what it says on his website. That's what it says on his website anyway.
Yeah, so I mean, he's not in any way affiliated with anything having to do with yeshiva anymore. And no, so the yeshiva, you know, is gradually trying to kind of develop you know, language that ends up responding to all the different commitments and responsibilities that we have. And I totally sympathize with any Yerush Mayim that hears Epicurus and says, when are they going to respond appropriately? And it's a legitimate sense of, you know, of outrage and anger, which I totally agree with you and totally sympathize. But at the same time, I also sympathize with the terribly debilitating fear that my colleagues and I, and we're talking about a small staff, because Mitzvah is not the big boogeyman that it sounds, it's a very small staff, the terribly debilitating fear of Oli Miyotri, Oli Miyitri. God forbid if we condemn that farther more than necessary, the consequences for the overall chances for a vibrant modern orthodoxy, I have to qualify it, modern orthodoxy, the consequences can be as great as not condemning him enough. And to find that really tough balance is very difficult. And I will be honest with you, David, I think that in the yeshiva, probably a month doesn't go by that we don't revisit the issue. Can we push the thing a little bit further? Can we kind of really go the next step? And part of it is also is to establish, so to speak, liberal credentials on the street that people would trust us enough to know that even if we come down really hard on Ikrei Emunah, we're still here to respond to people who have liberal values and want to find a place in orthodoxy. Is it too slow? Yes, for a lot of people it's too slow. Do I resent that we're not going faster? No, I don't. Did I make the right choice? I'll only find out when I get to Shemayim and Olam Haba. I'll never know until then.
Let me ask you another question. Okay, here's a drasha given by one of the rabbanim of Chayvavei Torah, and this was on before the Illinois Senate when they were debating whether to allow gay marriage, and it was like this. It says, "Rabbeinu Shalaylam." It says, "Lo tov heyaisa adam levadei." Right. It's not fear for anybody to stay single and to live single. Right. The Torah doesn't want to condemn anybody to a life of living alone. There has to be an opportunity for people to live and find a lifelong partner. Right? Basically, a speech about Lo Tov Heyes Adam Levadei. So my question to you is, and based on this speech and this thing they allowed, so my question to you is, I can understand that, you know, we should, in the given where the world is today, that orthodoxy should maybe be silent about the matter. Maybe it's like don't ask, don't tell, separation of church and state. But to come out and say that the Pasuk says Lo Tov Heyes Adam Levadei is advocating for gay marriage, I mean, the Marshal would say that's at Ziyuf HaTorah, would that be incorrect?
Yeah, you know, certainly you're not giving me softballs of it. You know, I don't think we have yet resolved what the role of, what is the Orthodox attitude towards the separation of church and state, right? Meaning, remember, he's talking to a American legislator that's not Orthodox, right? And the question then becomes, when you talk to an American legislator as an Orthodox rabbi, do you espouse Orthodox beliefs, or do you espouse Orthodox sensitivity? My bet to you, David, is that 95% of the people who sat there and listened to him thought, wow, these Orthodox people are not as mean and as discriminatory as I thought. He spoke so sensitively on this issue, and he created an incredible Kiddush Hashem. And at the same time, theologically, again, it comes back to my point before about who's your audience. He's not talking to the yeshiva bachur. He's talking to people who are not Jewish, or people who at least are not Shomrei Torah and Mitzvah. So he's not giving a shear now on homosexuality, in which case he would say, how dare you mention Lo Tov Heyeis Adam Levadei without talking also about the pasuk about Tor Eva, who he. That's not the context. And that's, I think, one of the biggest...
But could you make a Kiddush Hashem by going against the Torah, by misrepresenting the intent of the Torah? Is that a Kiddush Hashem?
Nobody doubts for a minute. See, here's the thing. The problem is that we're not operating in a vacuum. Orthodox philosophy, Orthodox belief, Orthodox values has been established, you know, for many, many years in America. Everybody knows Orthodox Jews are committed to Torah. The question now is, whether people affiliated with Kovovay can come and complement that attitude with an additional layer of sensitivity, kindness, and again, exactly what I said earlier to you. Can we do that speaking out of a Torah space and show people, look, that Torah that you always were told is primitive, is backwards, is exclusionary, guess what? That's not the whole picture. Yeah, of course I'm an Orthodox Jew. Of course I am opposed to gay marriage from a halachic perspective. But I can still encourage the legislator to explore the sensitivity issues, because guess what? Orthodoxy doesn't only talk about halacha. It also talks about other things as well. So you see, the problem, again, is that the people who critique Chovavei assume Chovavei is talking to a Lakewood Yeshiva audience, to a Rav David Soloveitchik's Beis Medrash. They're not talking to them. They don't need to be told, A, that gay sex is aser, B, that the Torah is the kindest thing that ever existed. The Chovavei message is for people, like I said before, who have experienced the kilkul and need support for the tikkun. So if someone goes to a legislator and says, look, I have kippah that makes me Orthodox, my shul is Orthodox, I nevertheless can come to the government and advocate sensitivity to human beings whose lifestyle I religiously find inappropriate.
But he's not saying that. But he's saying lo tov heyes adam lavad. He says the tyrant voracious says, he says, I think it's wonderful this that you're doing, and I'm advocating it. So what's the Kiddush Hashem about saying that what the Torah says is incorrect?
No, but again, David, you bring me your yeshiva education hat to bear on a conversation outside of a yeshiva conversation context. The context is not a yeshiva conversation. It's not. He's not coming to yeshiva bachurim and saying to them, hey, guys, just chug this all, you know, homosexuality, mishigas. That's not who he's talking to. You are taking what he said, bringing it into the Beis Medrash, pretending he's talking to you and saying, he's telling me that gay sex is not us there. He wasn't talking to you. He was talking to people who have their own ideas about gay sex and who are themselves saying that loneliness is the most devastating plague of modern Judaism, of modern life. And he comes along and says, listen, I sympathize with you. I think it's important that we should find venues for people for whom the Israel doesn't speak to nevertheless experience maximal companionship. So what's wrong with saying that? I really am not.
Because these people know that biblically it's forbidden. The Christians know that.
And they
that.
Still know, even when Rabbi Dullinger, this is the person you're referring to, Rabbi Barry Dullinger, even Rabbi Barry Dullinger gets up there and says, nobody thinks that Rabbi Barry Dullinger now all of a sudden rejected all of Jewish history. They know that. They know Orthodoxy is opposed to homosexuality. What they find out now is that, oh, guess what? There are still some people who are nevertheless sensitive, even though they're Orthodox. What a beautiful Kiddush Hashem.
And who advocate for it.
Who advocate for a secular government that's not bound by the Torah to really not let their fear of this get in the way of a desire to create opportunities for people to not have to be devastated by loneliness.
And what do you do? What do you do with the Gemara that says, "Nechrav Olam El Achikas Fushksuba Ala Zachar"? It says that
if someone, David, if someone would kind of make legislate based on the Gemara, I would fight tooth and nail for prohibiting gay marriage. We are not talking about a discourse that decides based things on Gemara. In my shul, if two men or two women come and say, Rabbi, would you come to... I'll tell you an honest truth, you know, I'll be very open with you. You know, I have a shul in Brooklyn, and there is a significant, you know, LGBT segment in the community, and I have two women who are in a relationship, and they asked me to sign their ketubah, and I said, I mean, I use a stronger word than I'm going to use with you. I say, absolutely not. Because, lo nechshel Yisrael lachtum ksuba. Yeah, of course, kamasa eretz Mitzrayim. But that's the far that people miss, is that Chovavei Torah had multiple conversations with multiple audiences, recognizing that there are parts that will speak to one segment of their population, and there are parts that won't speak to the other segment of the population, and I'm not going to deny them the pieces that speak to them just because I can't give them the whole spiel. I will not get up in the legislature and say, you should know the Rambam Paskin is Nashama Masololo Zobazo El Chayev Meets or whatever. They're not going to listen to me, but they will still listen when I say, look, the Torah is loving, the Torah is kind, the Torah is tolerant. What a beautiful Kiddush Hashem. I really am having a hard time understanding what the problem is.
I'll tell you what the problem I see the problem is. I don't
Please
think
help me
that,
out here because I'm not good. Getting it.
I'll tell you. I don't think that the Torah, I think that you're speaking the language of a person who says, you know, I can learn in the Beis Medrash and I could go steal in the world because the Torah
I can go what?
I can go be a thief in business because the Torah is...
How did you get to this?
Let me finish. Sure. Because the Torah is relegated to the Beis Medrash, right? The Torah is... It's stuck into the Dalet Amis of Halacha, and when we leave the Beis Medrash, we abandon the Torah. I have a different Torah. My Torah says v'chai bohem. We take the Torah, and that's our vision of the world. So you're saying when the Torah says it's an abomination in the Dalet Kaisle Beis Medrash. When we talk to the guy, we could say, you know what? The Torah doesn't exist for you. For you, it's a wonderful thing. Chas v'shalom. The same psychology of guys who learn and go out and steal.
No, that's not the same psychology because it is true that it is not something that they are commanded by unless we go kind of depending which aspect. You know, of course, it's one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach and all
that. Of course,
that.
It's one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach.
Of course,
it's one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach.
No, I understand.
The Chayiv Misa for it.
Yeah, no, for sure. Absolutely, for sure. But nobody's advocating them to steal. How do you make the analogy? I'm not getting the analogy at all.
He's advocating for gay marriage, right? So that is encouraging to do something that the Chayiv Misa for, according to our halacha,
we're supposed to live in the street, right? No, David, they're doing that anyway. They're not coming to us to ask the homosexuality question. They're coming to us and asking, now that I am doing this anyway, is there a way that you can help me to minimize the znus? Minimize the arayas in our community, help us be stable, help us be ethical, help us be moral, help us be also do the other things that are actually not a problem. They're not coming to us for a haskam on the homosexuality. Those people who are fighting for gay marriage are avowed homosexuals who already are engaging in homosexuality. They're not asking us that question. They're asking us, having said that, can you help me try to minimize the damage to society that rampant homosexuality causes? And my answer is yes. Yiddishkeit does have aitzes, even for those who have not embraced all of its beauty. I see totally the opposite of it. I really don't know how you can see that.
Okay. Here's a quote, by the way, that is... It's on your Facebook page, so take it for what it is, okay?
Yes. Apparently, David Rosenthal not only read every post of mine, he went through every like. Apparently, he determines the value of people by how many likes they've given me by post on my post.
Well,
it's a lot of work. It's a big task, which I
think. Okay, here's a quote. He says, the retelling of the Exodus story is fiction. It's a record of God's conversation with fictionalized characters.
Yep.
Could you just give me a little color on that?
It is so precious. It is so precious. Here is the thing that David Rosenthal and all of those who quote my Facebook posts are missing. There's a huge din out there, a huge noise out there in the world of social media. And if you have made it a commitment to delve into that world, as I did, you know, I like to joke with people that I have two pulpits. I have a pulpit in Prospect Heights and I have another pulpit on Facebook. And I really believe, by the way, that every Rav should be on Facebook, because that's when the younger generation is. The younger generation are virtual natives. They live in the virtual world, and if you want to be in conversation with them and have much fun with them, that's where you should be. In order to stand out, you need to tweak things so that people should pay attention to you, because there are billions of bits of data every time. When the Gemara, when Chazal say, "Keneged arba banim dibro Torah," echad chacham, echad rasham, echad tam, what do? They take four psukim and add a story overlay, and say, "Oh, there are these imaginary characters that the pasuk is talking about," and that's all I'm saying. But in order for me to get your attention, as obviously I did, and in the process also the hundreds of people who read Facebook, I drop an occasional shocking and provocative line so that people should listen to me, because otherwise there's millions of other things going on there. And frankly, once you have a generous approach to my post, which sadly a lot of the critics don't, and you take the time to think what I'm saying, you say, "Oh, he's just kidding a little bit. Oh, Chazal say Keneged arba banim dibro Torah. That means they've taken the parshas of the Torah and added a fictional overlay. There are fictional characters who are the God is dialoguing with. Oh, if Sefer said something cool, added a little bit of a layer that we can repeat as a Dvar Torah at the Shabbos table. Oh, let me listen to him tomorrow when he also tells me that we're not going to ever compromise on Kitnios, or that I'm never going to give you a heter on second day of Yom Tov, because he's my kind of guy. He kind of talks a little bit of the language that I can relate to. He uses kind of contemporary terms and says the Torah is fiction, when really it doesn't mean that the Torah is fiction. He only means that sometimes Chazal will insert fictional characters to make it exciting. Cool guy. Let me talk to him. Let me come to him next time with my Nida Shaila," which I frankly do because they trust me. So
I
once you bring a generous orientation to my post and you don't look to stop me, you understand that the politics of Facebook is such that you have to say something provocative for people to pay attention to you. You also realize that your audience is very suspicious of you. You're the firm rabbi. Why would I come to him? He doesn't get it.
Rabbi Katz, do you think that there's a danger that Talmidim of yours or Rabbanim who will go out will not necessarily understand it with the whole amkus that you're giving it over, not unlike, in Chas V'Shalom, I don't mean to compare you to, but like Mendelssohn, who had a haskama from Rabbi Kiva Egon, the Sefer HaBir, but they didn't get it, his Talmidim, right? Like, do you think that you're walking a line where when somebody talks to you, they could get it, but it gets lost in some time, you know, like when you play telephone, and what happens is the quotes get thing, and then all you're left with is the quote without the beer and vibes together of Chachamim Hizaru B'Divreichem.
Totally. I couldn't have said it better, David. I couldn't have said it better. And you must probably have described my Kapitul Tehillim every day. I beg the Rebbeinu Shleilem that my Talmidim should not misconstrue what I say in a way that's going to make everything I do a waste. And I'm terrified of that. I cry myself to sleep thinking of, you know, again, nefesh mit nefesh. I'm doing all that because I feel so strongly about how beautiful Yiddishkeit is, and I would love to bring each part of it. You know, I tell people all the time, you know my story. I grew up in Satmar. I left Satmar. People ask me, "So what happened?" I said, "You know, sadly, I don't have a story for you. I had a beautiful experience in the Haredi world. I loved what I got in the Haredi world. I still love aspects of the Haredi world, obviously not everything, because I couldn't stay. And I so desperately wish that people could get as much of the love for Torah, the love for Yiddishkeit. The way to do it is by doing what I do. But there's an incredible risk, as you rightfully pointed out, that not everybody's going to get it and end up saying things that are troubling and problematic. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, it's already happened. And many times I have to go back to students and say, "You don't get it. That's not what we're doing here. That's not what we're trying to do." You know, and I'll tell my students who become rabbis, if you're going to go to a shul and you're going to bring kulas, for every kula, I want a phone call say, "And by the way, Rabbi, this is the chumrah I brought to my community in exchange for that kula." But is it always working? No, it doesn't. And your example with the beer, an example of, you know, and there's so many other examples in history, are so apt and so debilitating. They're terrifying. They're terrifying. And, you know, when I get there, I'll find out, and who knows? Who knows? I hope that I'm doing the right thing. I'm trying.
Well, Rabbi Katz,
Thank you.
Thank you so much, and have a safe trip back.
Sure. Kaltiv, David.
Take care, Kaltiv. All the best. Bye-bye. We have on the phone with us Rabbi David Rosenthal, who's the author of a new book, Why Open Orthodoxy is Not Orthodox, which is available at your local bookstores as well as Amazon. He's a Talmud of Ner Yisrael, and he's received an approbation from the Rosh Yeshiva of Ner Yisrael, Rabbi Feldman. Welcome, Rabbi Rosenthal.
Thanks for having me.
So, Rabbi Rosenthal, you heard the interview with Rabbi Lopatin. Can you give me, in your words, what do you find not orthodox about open orthodoxy?
If I had to boil it down, it would be the belief by some, including some of the leadership, not in the classical view of the Divine Torah, Torah Minishamayim, and also the view of Halacha, the fact that many open orthodox leaders say that parts of the Torah are immoral, and they actually say that the sages corrected those immoral passages, and what naturally comes out of that is just like the sages corrected immoral passages in the Torah, that we should too, through Halacha, correct what they view that the sages did that was immoral. Those would be the two major things that I had to sum it up.
Can you give me a few examples?
Well, one example would be the head of the Talmud department says the mitzvah of Sota is capricious and patriarchal, and he says that Chazal looked at that mitzvah and they made it more sensitive to their sensibilities, to make it more moral, if you will. In a straightforward statement, an open Orthodox rabbi said there are parts of Torah that are ethically problematic. Another open Orthodox rabbi said that.
Go slowly.
I'm sorry.
When you talk about the head of the Talmud department, you're talking about Rabbi Yisachar Katz, I understand, right?
Right.
And he said that the Saita was immoral, the way the Torah wrote it.
Oh, his wording was it was capricious and patriarchal, and he viewed Chazal as coming along and making it more egalitarian, maybe meaning more favorable to women. So just the problem with that view is that.
The next case.
There was another rabbi who said that the machsheh filosachai, you know, the commandment to kill a witch, is immoral, and he cites the Salem witch trials as evidence that it's immoral to kill witches.
Which and who was
to bring,
that?
You know, that was Rabbi Zev Farber.
Okay.
And a constant, something under attack is by the Rosh HaYeshiva, is the mitzvah to destroy a molech. The way he says it, I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but it's in the book, that the rabbis saw the mitzvah of a molech as problematic, so they did what they could to make it not apply so much anymore. And he says that we have not erased the molech, but the mitzvah to destroy them. So I actually think you see a lot from that statement. You see that the possibility that mitzvahs can be taken away, which is against the Rambam's, I think, 9 thicker, and also that Chazal looked at the Torah through their own sense of morality and revised the Torah how they saw fit. And again, the natural extension of that is if we look at Halacha and see something which is immoral, we should do the same thing. But there's many such examples in the book. I obviously can't remember them all on top of my head right now. But the point is that it's being said by the leadership also, not just fringe rabbis. And the fringe rabbis who do say it, well, they claim they're the rabbis on the edge. You know, why hasn't the leadership of YCT come out and said and condemned what they're saying if they truly have a problem with it? That would be my question.
Now, Rabbi Rosenthal, what would you respond, though, to a college boy who doesn't understand the mitzvah of Machias HaMalek?
Well, I would say that these Jewish people believe that God gave the Torah. You know, that's the first step, is to see if you're working with the same starting point, you know, that Hashem gave the Torah. And once you believe that there is a God and that He gave a Torah, the ultimate arbiter of morality is God. And if God says something is moral, by definition, it's moral. How can something be immoral that is commanded by God, the arbiter of morality and goodness? And while we might not understand why it's moral based on our values, that's the job of a Jew, is to struggle and to understand the commandments.
I understand, but if the same college boy asked you, if genocide is moral because God commanded it, so then if an Arab says genocide is moral because their God commanded it, would we see what they're doing as immoral?
Yes, I actually asked one of my rebbeim that question once, and he responded, I mean, the ultimate answer is because we believe we're right. We believe that God gave us the Torah, and this is what he said. And, you know, the Arab might think that he's right, or the Muslim might think that he's right who believes in those things. But in the end of the day, we believe that he is incorrect.
Can you give me another example of where you struggle with open orthodoxy? I know you spent a lot of... How long did it take you to write the book?
About a year.
Wow. And I imagine you spent a lot of time... A lot of time on the internet, et cetera, researching it.
Yeah, I spent a long time looking at their writings online. I read a lot of their tshuvas. I listened to a lot of their shiurim. I drive back and forth between New Jersey and Maryland a lot, so I listened to their shiurim when I would drive. And I think actually, this is just me personally, something that bothers me, is that when you read their responsa, they're filled with they have a very common that there's mistranslations, and they're selectively quoting sources to advance an agenda. And I think that just goes in with the mindset that the ends justify the means, that I view Chazal, I view the halacha as problematic, so I'll use whatever means necessary to change that. And the reason that bothers me so much is because I'm from a community where not everyone was privileged to have a yeshiva education, and you know they would read these tshuvas and not know the difference. And that's something that bothers me, because I think it's in a way taking advantage of the less learned.
So give me an example of a tshuva where you think it was sort of the verbiage was misappropriated or mistranslated to reach an end that was unintended.
Sure. One tshuva was written by the Rosh HaYeshiva where he says it's a Kiddush Hashem to give money to help rebuild the church. So that's a deviation from what most of us would get.
A Kiddush Hashem to rebuild the church?
To give money to help rebuild the church, right? It's in chapter 3 of the book.
Okay.
I think besides the fact that most poskim and most normative halacha would disagree with that concept, what really bothered me was that he quoted a tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein. He said, relatedly, Rav Moshe says that it's okay
Rav Moshe talks about an architect who has a living.
Exactly. So what he does, he quotes that tshuva, that responds him, and he says that, relatedly, Rav Moshe says it's okay to serve as an architect for a church. So the layman reading that would say, oh, it seemed the implication given is that Rav Moshe would also be in favor of giving money to a church. That's the clear implication of the responsa. But if you look in the tshuva inside, Rav Moshe says it's a davar mechuer, meaning it's an improper thing to do. He says that it's only when there's eva, hatred, and also, or he says, I think, when a person needs a parnasa or there'll be a hefsid. That all Rabbi Linzer left out. In addition, Rabbi Linzer left out that Rav Moshe in another tshuva explicitly says it's prohibited to give money to a church. So he's quoting half of a tshuva of Rav Moshe without Rav Moshe's limitations and ignoring another tshuva. And the layman reading this, you know, that wasn't privileged to learn in yeshiva, he doesn't know all of Rav Moshe's tshuvas. He's not going to know this. And I think that's not so great to be misleading people like that.
And you don't think Rabbi Linzer meant that the Kiddush Hashem is because of Eva?
Doesn't sound like that. I mean, everyone's invited to read it themselves and decide for themselves, but doesn't sound like that at all when you look at it.
So give us another example of where a tshuva was, in your opinion, misuse of halacha.
Well, there's another, Rabbi Katz, this is actually the head of the Talmud department. He says that it's okay for a lady to nurse in shul and reveal herself. And he bases this on, if you read the tshuva, it's 40 pages long, it's in English and in Hebrew. And there were many, many things in there that were... very interesting. But one thing that struck me was that he actually mistranslates a rush in brachos. The rush is talking about, you know, how a moel, when he's performing the circumcision, can make a bracha on the bris, on a birchas hamila, because there's an erva in front of him. So what he says is that ba'oso shah, meaning at that moment, the moel is involved in the mila, and he can make a bracha even though the baby's his nakedness is revealed. That's one answer of the rush. So what Rabbi Katz does is he takes that rush, and he translates it as saying, any time an erva is revealed for a brief moment, there's no problem of saying holy words. Nowhere does the rush say, if the baby is uncovered for a brief moment, that's the reason why it's okay. He literally just invented it out of thin air. It's just a total mistranslation of Hebrew. And on that rush, he bases his whole response as saying that when a lady reveals her nakedness in shul, even in front of men, that's not a problem because it's only being revealed for a brief moment. And again, it's all everything's cited in the book. Don't take my word for it. Look it up yourself, and I think you'll reach the same conclusion I did.
So if you had to convey a message to the Rabbanim of Chai Vevei Torah or to the modern Orthodox listeners, and I imagine there will be many, what would it be?
To the modern Orthodox listeners, I would say that don't think that open Orthodoxy is just a left-wing version of modern Orthodoxy. It's really not. It's really going beyond the pale. It's more similar now to conservative Judaism, and I think that's a mistake many people make, and it's really why we wrote the book, is because people are viewing open Orthodoxy as just left-wing modern Orthodoxy, but it's really not.
And if you had to give a message to the students or the Rabbanim of Chai Vevei, what would it be?
I would just be interested. I mean, thus far, nobody associated with Chai Vevei has responded to any specific argument in the book. So I would actually be very interested to hear what they have to say, because I can't explain it. I mean,
you heard Rabbi Lopatin's interview. Was there anything in it that explained anything?
Not at all.
Do you think that their intent is in their heart is in the right place?
I obviously don't know what's going in someone's heart. Only Hashem knows that. But my impression is that many of them definitely, you know, mean the right thing. And I think actually a lot of people might have gone to Chai Vevei instead of YU or some other place and not knowing exactly what the leaders are teaching, what the leaders are preaching there. But I think now that hopefully with this book they'll be aware of that and maybe, you know, choose other institutions like Yeshiva University or other places, other places to go to.
Well, thank you very much. The book is called, the book is by Rabbi David Rosenthal. It's called Why Open Orthodoxy is Not Orthodox. It's available in your local bookstore, Sfarim store, or on Amazon. And you can read the book, listen to Rabbi Lopatin's interview, and decide, did he respond or didn't he? Thank you very much, Rabbi Rosenthal.
Thanks for having me.
We have on the phone with us Rabbi Shmuley Yanklowitz, who is the musmach of Yeshiva's Chai Vevei Torah. He received a second smicha from Rabbi Shlomo Riskind and a third one from Rabbi Nassim Lopez Cardozo. He earned a master's degree of Harvard University in leadership and psychology, as well as a degree of philosophy from Yeshiva University. Welcome, Rabbi Yanklowitz.
Thank you so much.
So, Rabbi Yanklowitz, you're very involved with Yeshiva Chai Vevei Torah, and sort of, an outspoken, you know, member of their creed, right, of open orthodoxy. Could you give our listeners your opinion of what it represents?
Sure. So, not all graduates of YCT consider themselves open Orthodox. It's a term that I myself embrace, that Rabbi Weiss has embraced, but many of the graduates merely call themselves modern Orthodox. But within this school and within this ideology, the idea is that Torah is to be learned rigorously and committed to rigorously. You know, the traditional learning, Micha, of Halacha with Kashrus and Nida and Shabbos, in addition to all the other stuff. But that also we should have a more open perspective on how we engage with all of these issues. When it comes to women's issues, more open to the possibility of leadership. When it comes to interdenominational issues, more open to engagement. Interfaith issues, more open to engagement. You know, understanding the halacha, more open to various sources that have existed, rather than just, you know, holding by one sort of more mainstream source. And so Chai Vevei has a very big range of musmachim that come out and their ideologies. And I think that's part of the openness, is that we want guys from the right, we want guys from the left as well.
So do you see Chai Vevei or the new open orthodoxy as changing halacha in any way? In other words, is it more of a hashkafa, or does it actually affect, you know, the view of the Shulchan Aruch?
Yeah, so Chovaveh is definitely not a proponent of changing halacha. I think that there will be new positions which will seem different from mainstream orthodoxy today, but that's not a change in the halacha, but merely holding by the Aruch HaShulchan as opposed to the Mishnah Brura or something like this. And so no one in the yeshiva, certainly the faculty and the students or the graduates, talks about changing halacha or uprooting halacha, God forbid, but rather accessing the full beauty and full potential of halacha.
So let me ask you a few questions on where it could be a little difficult to balance these. I know that members of Chovaveh, and I think yourself included, have come out in support of gay marriage. Now, notwithstanding the belief that many hold that we should separate church and state, right, and really religion should not get involved in gay marriage and sort of be silent about it. But to support gay marriage, isn't that a violation of the halacha of the, you know, the Issa Torah of Leisiskav, Ish Mishkeve Isha? And additionally, isn't that very problematic with, you know, the Gemara that says Lecharva Olam Ad Shekasvu Ksubal Ish, that the reason for the Mabul was when they started allowing gay marriage? Like, how would you juxtapose gay marriage with those two halachic, both halachic and hashkafic issues?
You know, it's a very important issue in our time, and I think the first complication is that we have to balance preserving the halacha and the broader values around the halacha at the same time making sure we're making a Kiddush Hashem in public. And so as times change, the way we talk about Torah, I think, publicly has to change as well, so that we are not considered sort of a backwards group who doesn't represent values that are important in the 21st century, but rather how halacha still matters and that Torah is something that enhances covered abrios. And so no one in the Chovaveh world is saying the Isser in the Torah, it's gone, right? That there's no longer an Isser. Chas v'shalom. I mean, everyone knows and agrees there's an Isser, but also says, okay, where there's not an Isser, then how do we ensure inclusivity? And that's kind of the essence of what Open Orthodox is trying to do. Where there's an Isser, we embrace that, but where there's not, then how can we be more inclusive? And so on this particular point, the point of, you know, should secular governments embrace a secular institution of something that's called gay marriage? America is, the verdict is out, and Americans overall feel that it is discrimination to prevent men from marrying each other, women from marrying each other. And in my view, it would be a chilul Hashem to come out publicly opposed to that, opposed trying to use Torah to block people from actualizing what they view as their life potential. Now, I also in no way view coming out in favor of secular gay marriage as in any way in contradiction with supporting the Isser in the Torah.
And why isn't that? Isn't that basically saying that something, you know, we're supporting something? If somebody were to support, I don't know, adultery, would you see that as a problem?
Ah, of course. Well, adultery is a major societal problem today, and I think we should all come out against it.
My point is, when we support something that's negative Torah on a public forum, why wouldn't you see that problematic?
Okay, because I think marriage is something very different than bia, meaning bia is a sexual act, right? Just like adultery is a sexual act that's an isser. Marriage is a relationship. And here we're saying, let me speak about my marriage for a moment. My marriage is much more than a sexual act. It's a partnership. It's raising children. It's building home. It's doing tzedakah. It's doing ma'asim tovim. So when we're talking about a relationship, we're dealing with a whole life, right? It's true. There's a ma'asah bia in there. There's an act of sexual relations that may be included or is included in that relationship. But to define a whole relationship by that act would be a big problem.
But we have a Gemara. The Gemara says, "Lecharva olam ad shekasfu shtar al hazachar," which means this very act, writing a marriage contract between two men was the cause of the mabul. Isn't that problematic coming out in support of that very act?
Well, I would say two things. And by the way, I really appreciate you bringing up this conversation and bringing it up in such a respectful way. I think there's a lot of heated emotions that emerge in this issue today, and I think that we've become in many ways unable to kind of bridge the divide in societal conversation. And so I would say two things. First, I think we're dealing with a shtar as a religious document. I think we're dealing with the notion of, if someone's saying I'm going to write a ksuva, for gay marriage, I think that we're talking about something very different than talking about, living in a society where that's done and not wanting to use Torah to prevent that. The second I would say is that there's, as with all halacha and the evolution of Jewish values, there's always a tension between multiple values and halachas, and we have to learn how to balance those. And so too here, we know, for example, there's a pikuach nefesh issue. We know today that there's a much higher rate of suicide among the gay community, and that the more we do to shun that community, the more at risk we put them. And so we're never putting a stamp on something saying, have sexual relations. We're clear about the issur. But we also want to say what is necessary in society today to have a healthy relationship to make sure people are safe, right? And we're not officiating at these marriages. We're merely saying that in secular politics, right, there's something that they call marriage, which is not what we understand to even be marriage, and we're not going to stand in the way of that.
Let me ask you, there are numerous statements in the press that have gotten people's, cankles up. Let me, give you a few. Here are from some, rabbanim in YCT, and I know that, you didn't make them, but maybe you could help us. Avram Avinu is a folklore character. Right, he never had children, and none of us are his grandchildren. Can you understand why people in sort of the quote unquote Haredi camp get very upset when they hear this?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think that there's been a graduate who's raised issues that have made that have put the Chovavei graduates together on whether we believe in Torah Min HaShemayim. And I think I can understand why someone would read that and feel quite concerned.
So wouldn't you think that it would be very helpful and healing if the Chovavei camp would sort of come out with a statement? I mean, we do have a concept of, the Gemara in Tainus and Chagiga. The Gemara says that Acher, Zarka by Divrei Minas, and Reb Meir was severely criticized for learning his Torah, for sort of closing ranks and saying, if you say things that are, if you scream fire in the synagogue, you're just not going to be accepted because you do damage to our community. Our community being the YCT community. Wouldn't it be helpful as a community if you read these few people, the Riot Act, and said, you're damaging us and we will not accept you, and you are the Acher in our community where you're just not accepted?
I totally understand that point. And from my perspective, Torah Min HaShemayim is like the ikar of Torah. It's like the very starting place is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah, and we're obligated and bound by Torah. Like, that for me is a starting place, and I'm very uncomfortable with anyone challenging or jeopardizing that commitment. And for me, that's at the center of Torah for me, and ought to be at the center of all Torah discourse, is the sense that this is not just an activity. This is not just another religion. This is really Torah Min HaShemayim. And I think that commitment is pervasive in the Chovavei camp, an absolute commitment to that. And, with a graduate who's been outspoken about believing in some form of Torah Mesinai, Torah Meneshemayim, but also raising concerns like that quote you just rose, has made many, many very uncomfortable. And to be honest, I think the movement's too young to really understand how to kind of grapple with all of this yet, kind of what is out of bounds. Because I think that the current commitment is to say, look, there's a lot of people who call themselves Orthodox today who have questions about Torah Min HaShemayim. And in my personal view, we should bring them closer to that. But the view is, why alienate those people more by telling them if they have questions or if they have doubts, they're now outside of the camp. And so Chavaveh has put out a number of statements, to my understanding, making clear this commitment. But you're right. It hasn't come out and said, you know, if you challenge this, you're outside. And I think part of the concern is alienating other Jews who have questions and feel like they're staying within halakha, but feel pushed out in some way.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your time.
All the best. Take care. Bye-bye.
All the best. Bye-bye.